From the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network, it's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan, all over the Great Lakes State, via the Michigan Talk Network, all over the world, via wildmichiganradio.com. That is our website, where you can pick up the podcast, link to our Facebook, link onto our Twitter. I'm on the Twitter now, at Wild Michigan. You can follow us there, follow us on Facebook, which we've been very active with, the CWD being found in a single deer in Meridian Township, Ingham County, just outside of Lansing. Hazlett is where the area is, to be exact. But we talked a little bit with Dan Eichinger, the new executive director, the newest executive director with MUCC. Also, they are a new sponsor of the show, Michigan United Conservation Clubs. Very excited to have them on board. Their programs, like On the Ground, getting people outdoors, people that have never hunted and fished before, learning about habitat, about preservation and restoration of habitat. Lots of great things going on with MUCC, and you can visit them at mucc.org. Also, our friends at HHA Sports, the leader in single pin archery sight technology, Lucky Buck Deer Mineral out of Osseo, Michigan. Time is now to get your Lucky Buck out. Again, if you are in Ingham, Clinton, Shiawassee County, no baiting, no supplemental feeding, no minerals of any kind going into those areas. But you can find all of that information at lucky-buck.com. To help you better prepare for the upcoming fall season. And also Costa sunglasses, great eyewear. Had the opportunity to use them first time, really start using them in Ireland, and you cannot believe the clarity that they have on a regular basis, just for, you know, everyday drivers, but to be on the lake with, nothing better. But my good friend David A. Rose, wildfishing.com, joins us right now. David, oh, what an experience, sir.
You know, you and I have had a couple seconds to chat about it, and oh, am I jealous. How's that?
You know, I was envious of your trip to Alaska, you know, rightfully so. Mm-hmm. And then as we were fishing with my good friend Owen O'Hagan, my girlfriend Sarah Marie, and this is what I had the opportunity to do. And I want to throw in Parig Giblin, because Parig was the guy that owns the Fisherman's Paradise that has the boats that took us out. But we got to fish with a gentleman from Italy. BlackBayLodge.com is where you can find Nicola. But we had a chance to fish with Nicola, and we had, you know, who's like Italy born, bred, lives in Ireland, and is a world-class pike guide for fly fishing, pike on the fly.
Very cool.
And on my other side was Richard McDermott, world champion pike fly angler.
Wow.
I'm the dork in the middle.
The monkey in the middle. Yep.
It was an absolutely incredible experience. And the whole time, you know, we're on Loch Derg, which is about 30 miles long, 12 miles wide, with nearly a boat out there. And the only reason there's any boats out there is because it was the mayfly bite, but we were after pike. And then we have this castle as a backdrop. You know, a centuries old castle as a backdrop. I can't begin to explain how cool this whole thing was, because it was a it's something I'd never experienced, and I'm still trying to fathom the fact that I was there.
That is really cool.
But no,
I know it's like you said, it's one thing to go to Alaska, this and that, but to be able to travel across the other side of the world and do what you did, that's unbelievable.
It was, and I'll tell you this: I didn't hook into any pike myself. Richard had hooked into one of the pike on the fly. He fought it for a few minutes and then handed it to me. What a difference. 5.5 pound pike, not a huge pike, although there are some very big pike in that water. And it was a different type of experience. I've never had anything that big on a fly rod before.
It's really cool.
It was. And the brown trout, on world-class brown trout.
That's really cool.
On the mayfly. But I want to shift back and bring myself back into Michigan for a minute. Just a minute.
Yeah, welcome back.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, I just transcendental meditation is what I was into. But, you know, we're getting into the late spring, early summer. I want to talk big water and salmon, because we're going to get into that point where in June here, we're going to be on the big water fishing for salmon.
Yeah. You know, right now, you know, the news is, if you read any article in Michigan or anywhere around the Great Lakes, Wisconsin, doesn't matter, excuse me, yeah, they're talking about how the environment is changing in the Great Lakes. You know, salmon are on the decline. You know, the alewives, they've had some tough years with alewives. We have all these invasive species. You know, the Lake Michigan, for an example, is changing. Well, you know, that doesn't mean there's no salmon left.
Right, yeah.
Maybe our days of going out with three people and getting 15 fish in an hour and a half might not be there. But the opportunity to catch fish, and not just like one or two, but several fish, is still there. So that's one of the things I want to say, is just because, you know, we're hearing all this stuff about big change on the Great Lakes doesn't mean that these fish aren't there.
No, and you know, I've been seeing these doom and gloom reports about the fish not being there. You know, the reports I've gotten over the past couple of years is they are taking these invasive species, goby are ending up in the stomachs of the lake trout and some of the other species. So they're finding out that, hey, this is a food source.
Yeah, I'll tell you, where I live here in the Grand Traverse County area, so Traverse City, you know, we've got East and West Grand Traverse Bay. Lake trout are the bread and butter for the charter captains here until late in the year when the salmon show up to run the rivers and whatnot. But lake trout fishing has been spectacular, and part of it is due to that goby. And a lot of people still call greasers. They like to call them greasers, or, you know, this oily lake trout. They don't have a good taste to them. But I'm going to tell you what, since they have changed their diet over to gobies, I would rather eat a lake trout now than a salmon.
Really?
A Chinook salmon, anyway, because Chinook are the ones that eat the alewives. And any fish that eats alewives ends up getting that fishier taste, even walleye. You know, you get up into the bays, the Knock and whatnot, back when the alewives are real prevalent on the outer bay and stuff like that up there. Even those fish would taste fishy, we'll call it.
Interesting.
And nobody says a walleye tastes fishy, but they did. So what happens is when these fish change over to a goby diet, they're much more tastier, a lot less oilier.
You know, I can see that, because I kind of liken it to anchovies on a pizza. You know, not touching anchovies, man, not a fan. But, but you know, I can see when the diet changes that there is a change, because, look, it's ingesting, it is taking on what this other fish has had to offer, and it becomes a part of them. And I could see where that'd be a big difference. And actually, that kind of really interests me now.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, the brown trout eat gobies, you know, the lake trout. You know, and gobies live near the bottom, and brown trout aren't afraid to go, you know, swim near bottom and eat in shallow water. And, of course, the lake trout are more prevalent to some. I mean, they suspend up high in the water column, too, but, you know, they're known as bottom dwellers. Now, the Chinook, that's the one everyone's going to have a tough time with, because they eat alewives. I mean, you take an alewife away, the Chinook salmon go away, and that's just the way it is. It was proven in Lake Huron, you know. So, yeah, that's what's really going to change. Coho fishing seems to still be great, because they don't rely solely on alewives.
Good, good. David A. Rose is our guest here. Fishing guide in the Traverse area, wildfishing.com is where you can find him. He's also an outdoor writer and longtime friend of the show here. We got just a few seconds left in this segment, but we definitely want to get to find out what's going on with you and what you got coming up charter-wise. A little bit later on in this show, in this hour, we're going to be speaking with Brian Brosdahl. So this
My
is going
buddy,
to be
bro.
Our good friend Bro, and we're going to be doing an all-fishing hour. We're going to get away from the doom and gloom of CWD for just a little bit and paint the sounds with salmon here on Wild Michigan.
Flanagan of clarevirtually.ie, inviting you to fish County Clare, Ireland. Now back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. Duran Martinez, your host on the Michigan Talk Network, being brought to you in part by MUCC, our newest partner here on Wild Michigan, Michigan United Conservation Clubs, protecting our rights for hunting, fishing, and trapping since 1937. Very happy to have them on board with us here on the show. David A. Rose, wildfishing.com, outdoor writer and fishing guide up in the Traverse City area, is joining us right now. David, I want to talk a little bit more about fishing salmon. It's been a while since I've been on the big water for coho and kings, and how does the progression run? What is usually going to be typically the first to really start the bite coming up here in June?
Well, I know in my neck of the woods, this northwestern lower Michigan on Lake Michigan, so if we go off, you know, anywhere from Leland down to Ludington, the Chinook salmon are going to, also known as the king, they're going to show up first. And here we are going into June, and depending on the wind and the weather and how the lake currents run and where the bait fish are, they're going to be the first to show up off these ports. Now, they're not going to get ready to run right away, run up the rivers and whatnot, but they are going to be out in front of some of these ports, and they're going to be eating all sorts of different, what few LYs are left, you know, in the doom and gloom. And of course, after that is going to be when the coho tend to show up. Now, before they show up, right now, there's been great brown trout fishing and lake trout fishing off some of these same ports. Actually, here it is late May when I'm talking to you. And there's some really good catches going on off these ports off the northwest lower Michigan for browns and lake trout.
Interesting, because, you know, I'm thinking as the water temps start to warm up, we're going to be seeing that activity. But because, again, we had such a long ice season this year, what are the temps looking like right now? Have the waters really started to warm up much at all?
Actually, they have. I was just looking at a report from, I can't remember who it was from, but anyway, they were showing the satellite views and everything like that of, you know, let's say last year, of course, which was ultra cold, to this year, and this year is actually warming up quite a bit. It's actually quite a bit warmer, the Great Lakes are, than they were at this time last year. That doesn't mean they're 60 and 70 and ready to go swimming in yet. That does mean you're going to see waters in the 40s and 50s. You might see some surface temperatures near a port or something like that, near a harbor, that are in the 60s and whatnot. But it really is prime temperatures for fish to come shallow. And even small boat fishermen can take a troll along the beach and catch some nice fish.
Yeah, and see, that's, again, you don't have to go out into the really big, huge, deep water to find those fish. And a lot of people don't have the access or the money to charter a boat like that. But, you know, to be able to just kind of troll those shallows, and maybe if there's a mud line out there, to hit that area, because I know consistently for me, that's been a good area to hit.
Oh, yeah, you always want to go where you can see some kind of, well, dirty water. Maybe not necessarily right in the midst of the dirty water, but especially along those edges, because that is obviously two different water temperatures coming out. Usually the muddy water means there's maybe a creek or a river that's dumping in nearby, and those fish are going to be up in that looking for bait fish and whatnot up in that warmer water. And even if you don't have a boat, by the way, you know, all these piers and stuff off all these ports, there's good fishing. You don't have to have a boat at all. You can just walk out there with a rod and start casting a spoon, and who knows, you probably can catch yourself a brown or a lake trout or maybe a steelhead yet.
Now, what are you recommending for casting off of some of these piers? I know you had mentioned something about the Boardman. We had talked about lake trout fishing in late October, early November, which, yeah, I don't have a problem giving up some of my deer time for some good fishing.
Well, that's right. And, well, the nice thing is, you don't, right now as we speak, and it's early spring or late spring or coming into early summer, any of these ports that have a river mouth coming out to them. So in my neck of the woods, again, that would be like Ludington, Manistee, Onekama, Frankfort, Leland, the mouth of the Boardman River. There's going to be fish that are going to be coming up into that warmer water and looking for bait fish. So I would suggest casting spoons, like a little Cleo or something like that, half ounce, some 10-pound test line, cast and retrieve, cast and retrieve. The moment you feel a hit, set the hook.
Yeah, it's a nice thought.
Well, get out there.
I know. You know, we have this conversation every year, speaking with David A. Rose. You can find him on our Meet the Experts page at our website, wildmichiganradio.com. It seems, for whatever reason, my time in the outdoors has been less and less and less, but I really, really am going to make the effort and almost guarantee the fact that I will be able to fish with you this year, because otherwise I'll just give up the man card.
Yeah, exactly. Just be done with it. No, you promised me you would give up a week of fishing in the fall and come up and go fishing, or a week
hunting
of hunting, excuse me, and come up and go fishing. But, the point is, I need to take more time to do it. Everybody does. So then that's really what we all need to do, is just to actually grab the kids, maybe the neighbor's kids, grab the wife, whoever, go out there and hit the waters.
Absolutely. Now, I completely missed the spring steelhead run because of everything going on and the trip and everything else. Will we see any steelhead lingering about, or are we going to see the Skamania throughout the summer? How does that whole thing work?
Well, you know, actually, it seemed to be that the guys and gals that really went out steelhead fishing had a hard time early in the season. But later in the season, even through now being, again, this late May, early June time, there's still some steelhead in a lot of the rivers. They're going to be post-spawn. There might be some just coming up in to feed. These river mouths, again, those steelhead, just because they're not spawning doesn't mean they're not going to come in and feed. So you can go to some of these ports, stand on a pier, and try and catch some of these steelhead. So I think you're going to have a good chance, excuse me, in the next couple weeks, if you go out to a pier, cast a spoon or something like that, you can catch a steelhead. Also, Skamania, I'll tell you, last year surprised everybody. There were a lot of Skamania steelhead. Now, for those that don't know, that's a steelhead strain that tends to run in the summer months, even though they might not spawn until the spring of the following year. They run into the rivers, July, August, and all the rivers in this northwest lower Michigan had a lot of Skamania steelhead in them this last year. So it could happen again this year.
Well, I like that, because the prospects of getting a hold of some fish this year are always good to me. And again, in the next segment, we're speaking with our friend Brian Brosdahl about doing some pad fishing, finding bluegills and bass and the like, because seasons, pretty much everything's open right now. And we are looking forward to getting out, and that's why we're speaking with David A. Rose now, because we're going to be hitting the big water, unfortunately. Well, not unfortunately. It'll be for walleye come June, but a little bit later on this summer, I definitely want to get together and do some fishing up there in the Traverse City area. If you'd like to get in contact with David, find him at our website, wildmichiganradio.com. There is a link for Meet the Experts. David is on that page, and you can also go to wildfishing.com. That's David's guide service, or check him out anywhere, man, in any of the publications that you write for, and that is a big number.
I write for just about everybody. That's my main forte of income, is I'm an outdoor writer. So when it comes to guiding, I've actually kind of lessened up a little bit on that. I still guide. I still have several trips in the books and whatnot. I just don't do it as much as I did. But it's a great excuse for me to get on the water and teach other people how to fish.
Thank All right. You. David A. Rose, wildfishing.com, right here joining us on Wild Michigan. Our website, wildmichiganradio.com, on the Michigan Talk Network.
Hey, this is Mark Zona from Zona's Awesome Fishing Show, and you're listening to my guy, Duran Martinez, on Wild Michigan.
I'm on a first-name basis at the tackle shop. I got a charge account running up nonstop. They ought to give me my own parking spot. I can't fit another plug in my tackle
box. Welcome back to Wild Michigan. Duran Martinez, thanks to our good friend David A. Rose, and helping us with a little bit of big water fishing. Coming up here this summer, a little bit of king salmon talk, a little bit of lake trout talk. Things looking on the upside, even though we've been painted a picture of doom and gloom, a lot of it on for salmon on the Great Lakes. I think it's more optimistic for anglers than what we're seeing. But again, fingers crossed. Thanks to our friends at HHA Single Pin Archery Technology, nothing finer in the industry. Find a link on our website, wildmichiganradio.com, and you can find a link to their podcast. podcast as well. They do a great job with their podcast, and they are on our media partners page. But HHA Sports, and thanks to those guys. Phenomenal, phenomenal equipment. And you can get that link on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. As you can find David A. Rose from Wild Fishing in our media partners page on Wild Michigan, you can find Brian Brosdahl, pro angler, longtime friend, and panfish guru. And bro, welcome back. It's we are heading towards June. And the fishing for panfish. This is I want to ask the question. Did I miss the whole bluegill on the beds thing? Because I've been so buried in everything else.
Well, hey, thanks for having me, Durant. No, you know, it all depends on the water temperatures. Crappies spawn in the low 60s. They begin their spawn and then are obviously long gone after that. And water temperatures for bluegills to spawn is in the low 70s. So, you know, if it hits 70, you still got time. If it's in the mid-70s, then they're gone. So it's all water temperature. And every body of water is at a different time. And if you miss the spawn where you're at, you can always drive north to North Michigan, and water temperatures are actually a little bit less the farther north you go. And that's one way to follow that spawn. They go in the hard stem rushes, maiden cane, canary grass, whatever you want to call it, and any place that there's hard bottom. Now, if there's not a lot of emergent vegetation, they will spawn in other vegetation as long as there's a hard, firm bottom that the males can fan out a nest, then they lay the eggs. But it's the key thing is temperature, because when it's time, they're in, and then they're out of there. But even if the temperature ain't quite there, they're going to start showing up in those areas. The bigger bluegills start spawning a little bit deeper than the other ones. You'll find them as shallow as 3 or 4 feet, and on average, if you can find deep, tall, emergent vegetation, they'll be in even 6 feet. But I found some of my biggest fish out even deeper, 7 to 10 feet. But the really big ones are in and out of there. So that's the key, is timing it.
It is about timing, and that's something that, you know, this is why we come to you on this thing. Panfish have been your forte through the ice and throughout the year, you know, to find those big bulls, those big gills. And we get close to, as we are approaching June, we've had some pretty warm surface temps, but as cold as the water got this year, I think the balance is finally getting to about that point where it's going to be about perfect, if not now, very, very soon.
Oh, yeah. And even if they're not actually going through the act of spawning, they are going to be showing up in those areas. And if you don't find them, just remember morning and evening, they will go to the sites that they picked. They pick and they'll feed on the edges or in those areas. And even they're not far away, I'll tell you. They'll be in the surrounding vegetation. But the best case scenario, if you do find some rushes or some cane with a few rocks scattered in there, if you're finding it with some log submerged timber, it's a blend of everything. So they pick the best of everything. When I'm looking for these spots, I mark spots, because I'll find the old logging days left a lot of logs on the bottom of all of our lakes. And some of these spots actually have a few boulders mixed in. Mm-hmm. And that mix is dynamite. Add some cabbage weed or some coontail on the outside. And it's good canopy and protection for their nests from predators.
It is. And it gives the opportunity, too, for them to have their own food sources in that vegetation.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And some of the ways of targeting, If the rushes are wide enough or if there's pockets, I'll pitch to them with a safety pin style spinner on a very small jig. You can use a small mimic minnow with a spinner. Just add the spinner. You can pick them up. They just clip on and toss that in there with just a wax worm or just a chunk of a worm or a night crawler. And what I love is leeches. And leeches, even panfish leeches, can be a little bit too big sometimes to add to a small lure like that. But I'll take and I'll cut it up into little pieces and I'll put it on with a mimic minnow. And fire tagger's hard to beat. This is the one time a year that really large bluegills will target young of the year perch. Now remember, the perch are so small and they spawn right after ice out, and they're just little fry. And they feed on them because they're soft. They're just this little chewy thing floating around, and it's probably the one time. So throwing real small mimic minnows or anything in bright color patterns really works well. But just adding a little bit of bait on there, so there's impulse bait by Northland has scent on it, or there's other scented plastics out there also you could try. But one thing you got to remember, adding a little bit of meat on there never hurt anything. A light bite bobber, just enough that'll go down on the slightest tug is great. But I like using long rods when I'm fishing in emergent vegetation because you can't fight the bluegill through the water. You got to fight them on the surface. If you try to bring them through, they wrap, and they'll break even 8-10 pound test wrapping around the weeds. That's what they have as their defense, is to auger in a circle. And so you want to fight them up vertically. And St. Croix makes some panfish rods, 8 to 11 footers, that are real light action and real sensitive, and you can fish vertical. You don't cast if you don't have to. You want to drop straight up and down, and you're just kind of plunky pockets. And when you do get a fish, you want to fight them on the surface and not down deep, because if you do, he'll wrap you and snap you. You know, that's the one thing you got to remember.
Exactly. Brian Brosdahl is our guest, Bros Guide Service. Of course, you can, I don't know, look about any Northland tackle package or Frable package. You can find Bro on there if you want to see what he looks like. But you can also get a link on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. We're speaking with Bro. He's out in Minnesota right now, where he's from, talking a little bit about bluegill, about panfish, and getting them on the beds, because that's a lot of time. That is the time that a lot of folks really like to target them, because you can find some of the bigger fish of the year, and they're going to be, I think bluegill are aggressive like all of the time, but this time maybe a little bit more so.
Yeah, they're very aggressive, and one thing to remember, too, when you're choosing line, you want to have a swivel and then 2 feet to your hook at the bottom if you're using a slip bobber, and use a couple pound test or use braid on your main line, but have a little leader at the bottom that'll break away. So if you do hang up, if they do wrap you in there, you don't have to lift your anchor and go in and get it. Or if you snap it, you don't lose your bobber and your knot and the whole works, because that's the nightmare if you have to retie everything. So use a lighter line below your swivel underneath your sinker, and if you do have to break it off, you only lose your hook. Another thing to remember, too, is this time of year, the bluegills are really easy to get. One thing to remember that just to target them, if you get some real giants, maybe take a few smaller ones, like the real big ones. Once you take them, the whole population will stunt. So we've learned that if you got lakes with 9, 10, 11 inches, take them under 9. And that's still a big fish, and it's not even a fork full of meat. If you want to mount them, no problem. But I always say if they're really big, and males are the most important, they keep the little bluegills from spawning. If the little bluegills spawn, they stunt. So just a few key things to remember. If you have your own private pond or something, those kind of management practices will help you have big bluegills forever.
All right, Brian Brosdahl is our guest. You can check Bro out on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. And we are being brought to you by HHA Sports, the number one name in single-pin archery sight technology. We're going to come back with more with Bro next. Wild Michigan, the Michigan Talk Network. Get down in that Georgia clay and alpine peaks. At the bottom of a real tall cold drink. Chilling to some Skinner or some Mohawk.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan. Cross the line at an altitude time, in a state 94 more miles through the Great Lakes State. Turn it up so the bus ain't late. Another night in Michigan.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I am Duran Martinez on the Michigan Talk Network. Our website, wildmichiganradio.com. You can follow us on the Twitter, at Wild Michigan. Also on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Wild Michigan. And we are being brought to you in part by Costa Sunglasses. Had the opportunity to use mine for the first time, wearing the Cat K style over in Ireland on our trip. And Matthew Solon, a a young man that was on the show with us, 28 years old, guides all over the world, in Russia and Argentina and Chile and a few other places, who uses the Costa sunglasses in the prescription form. And trust me, this guy knows his stuff. And I have found myself that I have used literally nothing better than what I'm wearing right now. And thanks to Costa for being a part of our, excuse me, our team. And bro, you're using them too, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely. I'll be honest, I've tried a lot of different sunglasses, but what I find with the Costas, I'm out there every single day. Like, I'm going to be out today too, is my eyes don't get a beating like they do with some of the other glasses. They're really clear lenses, and they protect your eyes. And man, I tell you what, those harmful rays, you do not want to be out there with the wrong set of glasses. Cheap sunglasses are a headache, and I guarantee you that.
Yeah, no, I get it, and they just amaze me. And the thing is, too, I've had a lot of really good pairs of sunglasses, but these are the easiest to clean with the cloth. Just wipe clean. No problems.
Absolutely. They're easy to clean, and they when you wear them, they don't cause any strain. Like, some of them will pinch you in the ears or whatever. They have a very good ergonomic comfort level. And if you're out there on real hot days where you're sweating, or if it's freezing cold, I've had them all the time. I've had them on the snowmobile driving across a lake, and I've had them in 104 degrees fishing on Oahu in a tournament. So no matter what, I like them Costas. I mean, they've just been good.
Absolutely. Brian Brosdahl is our guest here on Wild Michigan. Bro, you talked about keeping things simple when it came to bluegill, to have that... that leader, a couple of foot leader and a lighter pound test. That way, if you get hung up with a fish, it snaps off easily, because instead of moving the boat from a spot you want, disturbing the area where you're at, it's just that much easier. And you reminded me of a story. We were fishing on the Detroit River one time for walleye, and there was, and you see all kinds of boats on the Detroit River. Love walleye season in the spring. This guy was fishing out of like a 20-foot bay liner, and he would get a snag, and he's the only guy on the boat, and he's driving the whole boat around in a circle to undo this snag. I'm like, it's a dollar lure. Cut the line, please. But, you know, keeping it simple, bro.
Well, and the first time I fished Detroit River years ago, I was told, don't put down a lure that you like. If you like it so much that it's going to bother you, don't put it down. So I learned really quick that you put it down, and sometimes it'll last for a couple hours.
Sure.
I had where I didn't get a snag all day, but I've also had 100 snags in a day. The closer you get to the fish, the more snags there are. And so when you're out fishing panfish, big bluegills, there's nothing more frustrating than when you snap your line because you're hooked in brush or the bottom of cane, and you snap off the knot, the bobber, the whole works. And you look over in the weeds, and there's your bobber still with the knot. You know, it's frustrating because you have to put a new knot on and all that stuff. So I like to use braid. I can use a 10 or 15-pound braid. I found if you go too thin on the braid, it cuts into the weeds. And then, so you don't want it too thin and too sharp. You could even use mono and have a 10-pound test as your main line, and then go down to a 6-pound test below a little swivel underneath your sinker. So all you're going to lose is your Aberdeen hook or your jig, and it's just less frustrating. But try different types of baits. I always say that ice fishing baits are the most detailed. Don't put those away, because they're great. And small ice fishing plastics, or the mud bug from the Bros Bug Collection, sure, is really awesome. The gill getter, and then also bloodworms. The other day had perch and bluegills and crappies coughing up bloodworms, red bloodworms. See, that's a midge fly in the summertime, and before they hatch, there's still the actual bloodworm. So even this time of year, they're still down there, and those are the areas that they're going to have a lot of feeding. But dropping a bloodworm in an area where they're feeding on them is candy.
Well, so, and with the impulse too, the Northland impulse, they have that live bait impregnated into the plastics. They still won't tell me how they do it, bro. But it works.
I work on them. I'm after them. They won't tell me all the secrets either. But I want to get that formula, because I'd like to figure out a way to put it on crankbaits and everything else, because It's the only bait that I repeatedly have crappies, and they'll hit it right away, and they set the hook right away, or they're gut hooked. And crappies do not gut hook usually, and bluegills, and so they're eating it like it's their favorite cricket or whatever. So it's definitely stuff to try. But make sure you get the right colors, or have several colors. Light, sharp jig heads, very important. As far as going at it, looking at topo maps, seeing where the food shelves are, I sit in my boat before I leave, and I'll look at areas on my Humminbird, because you just turn it on, mm-hmm. and then once it's on, you can scroll around on the map chip, and you can look around. But these areas, you're just looking for food shelves that are less than 12, 14 feet, and once you're out there, side imaging, the best thing known to man since the wheel, you go along, you find the edges of the weeds, the outside edges, and if they're not up in the cane or in the bulrushes, you could drop out to the outer edge of the weeds, and that's usually where they are. But if you're on a giant lake, obviously some weed beds are hundreds of acres. They're not going to, that's a needle in a haystack. You want to look real close to the emergent vegetation.
Speaking with Brian Brosdahl here on Wild Michigan, and brought to you in part by Costa Sunglasses. Bro, I look at, when I think about perch, a lot of guys do it on Erie and on Lake St. Clair come fall time. But what about early summer, late spring perch? I don't hear a lot about that bite.
Well, they're around, they're not always where the walleyes are. When I fished on, every time I fished on Erie, I'll find pockets of perch, and I want to sit and fish for them, but I'm usually chasing walleyes. And they're usually off on their own, and they're near the bottom, and a lot of people are fishing suspended fish or crankbaits or spinner rigs. But I found some sandbars out there that are just loaded with perch and no perch fishermen around. And a lot of times you'll find most of the fishermen will stack up on the first islands. Well, getting out on the sandbars, on the nice days, obviously, the sandbars where there's a little bit of gravel and sand, because perch love crayfish, perch love emerald shiners, and they're going to be near these areas. But this is the time of year, the deepest, coolest weeds, right around the time that the crappies are done spawning, the bluegills are moving in, I always catch perch on big, green patches of cabbage and coontail, but as deep as it grows, and the perch will be right there. And the lakes that do produce jumbo perch, those are the areas, because that's where the bloodworms are still working their way out. When there's a midge fly hatch, where we see most of the midges and smoke columns of midges, those are areas that are still producing bloodworms, and these perch know where it's at. But if there's a lot of crayfish, they'll be on them. So if there's cara, which is a skeletal fragmented algae, it's a form of algae, it looks like a grapevine when you take the grapes off. Wherever that stuff is, the perch love it, because crayfish are underneath it, and on the edge of that could be really good.
Brian Brosdahl is our guest here on Wild Michigan. Again, you can find Bro on our website, wildmichiganradio.com, brosguideservice.com. There's a link to that on a Meet the Experts page, where Bro can be found, and a longtime friend of the show. Bro, how did your ice season pan out? I know you guys had early ice in Minnesota, and the streak again, and like we did last year, it stayed long. So, you kind of went from spring to summer to winter to spring in a day.
It was amazing, amazing season. I never got a chance to go on Erie this year. I was talking the good word in the stores, and then I was also guiding, but they did really well out there, and the ice was really good, and they were able to fish around the islands on Erie, and that's on my bucket list, is be able to go when it's actually good. But this year was phenomenal. You could drive anywhere. There's people out there in two-wheel drive station wagons, and I knew that it was that's too easy. When it's like, I've seen vans, with two-wheel drive vans out on the ice, and you could have rolled a ball down the middle of the lake
with right.
a little snow. But then when spring came, no one could launch a boat because it was real shallow, but we got dumped on by rain. But great years like that, remember, here's the key thing. If you had less snow than normal on your lake, sometimes the weeds start growing right away under the ice. And I've seen that in a lot of situations where the fish were behaving a little bit differently because there was some early weed growth, and that totally changes the pattern. And,
all right.
Keep an eye on that stuff.
Brian Brosdahl here. It's Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.